Welcome to the Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast brought to you by FTR, where we share timely transportation intelligence with you on a weekly basis. The Trucking Market Update is hosted by FTR's Vice President of Trucking, Avery Weiss. As Avery presents the information in the podcast, you can follow along and review the graphs and indicators by downloading the PDF or PowerPoint of the presentation from our podcast landing page. A link to the PDF and PowerPoint is available now at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. From there, you can also find past episodes and downloads for the Trucking Market Update, as well as the weekly Rail Market Update with Todd Tronowski and much more. That link again is www.ftrintel.com/podcast.
Welcome to FTR's weekly Trucking Market Update. I'm Avery Weiss, Vice President of Trucking. This is episode 161 for the week of May 9th, 2022. Before we start, a reminder that you can download a PDF with graphics related to this discussion at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. Last week, I was going to talk about the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration's proposed rule on speed limiters, but it was a crowded week anyway, and then we had the unexpected development regarding diesel prices. So let's discuss it now, and we'll really just cover the basics here. FMCSA has essentially proposed to resurrect major elements of a Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, or NPRM, that was issued late in the Obama administration, specifically on September 7th of 2016, jointly by FMCSA and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, or NHTSA. Although the Trump administration did withdraw various rulemakings in 2017, this was one that it didn't withdraw, but it just merely shelved and made it a low priority. As recently as late last year, during the Biden administration, both FMCSA and NHTSA had listed the NPRM as a long-term priority, but had not signaled any immediate action. Now, FMCSA has decided to move forward with a proposal that is based on motor carriers using available technology, and that's something that's within that agency's authority. The NHTSA element of the joint proposal had been to require vehicle manufacturers to set maximum speed as determined by further rulemaking and to establish a means for tracking compliance. Those types of vehicle requirements are not within FMCSA's authority. FMCSA doesn't, in general, regulate vehicle manufacturers, so this is a sort of a different approach, I guess you would say. In what's called a Supplemental Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, or SNPRM, FMCSA has requested comments by June 3rd on its plan to move forward with a rule that would require carriers operating in interstate commerce to limit the speed of commercial motor vehicles that have a gross vehicle weight or weight rating of 26,001 pounds or more, and that are equipped with electronic engine control units, or ECUs, that are capable of governing maximum speed. At what speed would trucks be governed? Well, that would be established by rulemaking just as it was going to be 6 years ago. It's notable that the purpose of the SNPRM is not to gather comments on whether speed limiters are a good idea, although you can bet that most of the comments that will be submitted on it will actually focus on that issue. Rather, it's really more technical about what skills or training are needed to adjust or program ECUs, what equipment is needed, how long the process takes, and so on. Also, there's questions related to whether there should be retrofit requirements for engines that are not manufactured with speed-limiting capabilities built into the ECUs, and the agency has also asked whether the rules should be expanded to include Class 3 to 6 vehicles. Now, not surprisingly, the SNPRM has already split the trucking industry. The Owner-Operator Independent Drivers Association, or OIDA, which represents owner-operators and very small fleets, is vehemently opposed to speed limiters, while the American Trucking Associations praised FMCSA for its, quote, constructive, data-driven approach, end quote. As I mentioned earlier, comments are due June 3rd. If you want to read the SNPRM and the comments submitted to it and provide your own comments, you can visit regulations.gov and search FMCSA-2022-0004. Okay, let's talk about more pressing issues, including diesel and petroleum prices. So if you thought there would be a giveback in diesel prices last week after the unexpected surge of 34.9 cents a gallon in the prior week, you were disappointed. The national average price of on-highway diesel rose another 11.4 cents to another record price, which was $5.62.3 cents a gallon. In the prior week, the East Coast had led the way with price surges of 86.1 cents in New England and 68 cents in the Central Atlantic region. Once again, those hot spots were the two regions. They both saw increases of 23.8 cents, but all regions saw gains of some level. As we mentioned last week, a big issue, and this is especially true on the East Coast, is depleted inventories of distillate. In the latest data, U.S. stocks of ultra-low sulfur distillate, the base stock for on-highway diesel, declined to their lowest level since November of 2014. However, inventories of distillate on the East Coast were at their lowest level on record in data that goes back to 1990. Meanwhile, it was looking like crude prices would do nothing but increase pressure on diesel prices, but in the most recent trading, that conclusion is not quite so certain. Last Friday, crude closed at just under $110 a barrel, which was the highest price since late March. However, on Monday, May 9th, West Texas Intermediate plunged more than $7 a barrel to less than $1.03 per barrel. Now, $103 a barrel. Now, $103 a barrel isn't cheap, but $7 is a notable drop in a single day. Perhaps more significant is the reported reason for that decline, and that is fears that COVID-related lockdowns in China would reduce global energy demand. Now, we haven't talked much in this podcast about what's happening in China, and I apologize for that, but it is potentially a very big deal given how much of our imported goods for both consumer and industrial consumption come from China. The lockdowns that have been occurring in Shanghai and Beijing, as well as dozens of smaller Chinese cities, could significantly reduce freight transportation for at least a few weeks, but then put major stress on ports and freight networks once those lockdowns end. It's a bust-and-boom scenario that could have some truly negative near-term effects on carriers, but then some major pressure later this summer, assuming, of course, that the economy remains strong. We obviously will revisit this issue, but for now, I would say that if you're looking at the situation in China as having the potential for bringing down fuel costs, then I think you're most definitely missing the bigger picture. Okay, this is a good time to move on and talk about the spot market for the week ended May 6th, which is week 18. Dry van rates in the truckstop.com system increased for the first time in 6 weeks, and refrigerated spot rates rose for the first time in 3 months during the week. However, as we already discussed, the week saw diesel prices surge to a record. FTR estimates that excluding a calculated fuel surcharge that typically is not paid separately in spot transactions, rates would have fallen in both of those segments. Meanwhile, flatbed spot rates eased slightly for only the third decline in that segment of this year. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about rates. Total spot rates eased about a penny. The broker posted total rate was nearly 3% ahead of the same week last year, but we estimate that excluding an imputed fuel surcharge, rates were down nearly 12% year over year. The total spot rate is only about 8 cents below the record posted at the end of 2021, but the rate excluding fuel is about 40 cents below the record. Let's look at rates by segment. Drive-in spot rates increased about a penny. Rates are down about 67 cents from the record level posted at the end of 2021. Rates were about 10% lower than the same week last year, but nearly 29% lower if we exclude an imputed fuel surcharge. Refrigerated spot rates increased nearly 5 cents. Rates are down about $1.21 since hitting a record at the end of last year. Rates are nearly 16% below the same 2021 week, but about 31% lower excluding a fuel surcharge. And flatbed spot rates declined nearly 2 cents from the prior week's record. As I mentioned earlier, that's only the third time this year that we've seen a decline in flatbed rates. They were 8% higher than the same week last year, but 5% lower year over year if we exclude fuel. Okay, let's talk about volume. Total load postings edged up just over 1%. Volume was nearly 30% below the same 2021 week. But that comparison is distorted because the all-time high volume was in week 18 last year, and that was primarily because of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance's annual International Road Check roadside inspection event. Road Check, which this year will be held May 17th through 19th, invariably results in stronger spot volume as driver capacity falls throughout the freight network. Drivers, of course, are wary of these roadside inspections, and many of them choose that time to take vacation or call out sick or just otherwise not drive. And that, of course, pushes a lot of route guide freight into the spot market. Volume in the latest week was about 74% higher than the five-year average, however. Truck postings rose about 14.5%, and the market demand index fell to its lowest level since November of 2020. Okay, let's look at volume by segment. Dry van load postings rose 8.1%. That's the strongest gain since the first week of this year. Volume was about 28% below the level posted same week last year, and as I mentioned, that was distorted by Road Check, and it is about 67% above the five-year average for the week. Refrigerated load postings increased about 2%. Volume was about 30% lower than the Road Check fueled volume during the same week last year, but nearly 76% above the five-year average for the week. Flatbed load postings declined more than 1%. Volume was nearly 31% below the same week last year, but about 79% above the five-year average for the week. Let's wrap up the weekly indicators with mortgage rates, which resumed their upward trend in the latest week after pausing for just a week. According to Freddie Mac, the rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage rose to 5.27%. That's the highest level since August of 2009. We already have indications that mortgage rates are starting to take a little bit of the edge off of the strength in the housing market, and this trend certainly will continue to do that. Okay, we have just a couple of groupings of monthly indicators, and they're all about the labor market. Despite steady job growth, the labor shortage continues at a record pace. The number of unfilled jobs at the end of March was the highest on record at 11.5 million. Job openings were nearly 65% higher than they were immediately prior to the pandemic. Job quits also set a record in March at 4.5 million. They were about 32% higher than they were in February of 2020. Okay, so the rest of the podcast is about the labor or the employment situation report for April that came out from the Bureau of Labor Statistics last week. The U.S. economy added 428,000 payroll jobs seasonally adjusted. Coincidentally, that is the same number of jobs added in March after we saw a small downward revision, very small, in the BLS initial data. Payroll employment is now 1.2 million jobs, or 8 or 0.8% below February of 2020. Although the unemployment rate remained at a very low 3.6%, the labor participation rate declined 0.2 of a point to 62.2% after several months of incremental improvement. The reduction was surprising given the general trend toward loosening of pandemic-related restrictions, so perhaps it's just an outlier. This data is not perfect, and so there are going to be some variations from month to month that we just call noise. It's a very technical term. Okay. All major sectors of the economy saw job growth. One surprise was that leisure and hospitality, which in really for the last year or more is almost always the leader in job growth, posted only the second strongest growth for the month in adding 78,000 jobs. That sector remains more than 1.4 million jobs or 8.5% below pre-pandemic levels. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the entire economy is 1.2 million jobs below pre-pandemic levels. And that means that essentially the rest of the economy nets out at job growth, and leisure and hospitality is the biggest drag by far. The strongest increase in employment was in trade, transportation, and utilities, which added 104,000 payroll jobs. Transportation and warehousing accounted for exactly half of that gain, led by warehousing and storage, and couriers and messengers. That latter category, what we typically call parcel and local delivery, added 14,900 jobs in April. However, the March level was revised downward by 4,000. Let's talk about trucking. After recording its first seasonally adjusted decrease in jobs in nearly 2 years during March, For Hire Trucking in April posted its strongest increase in payroll employment in 9 years. The industry added 13,000 payroll jobs seasonally adjusted. Employment is now 48,700 jobs, or 3.2% above the pre-pandemic month of February 2020, seasonally adjusted. The April jobs level is for hire trucking's highest ever, which isn't too surprising. The sharp increase could be a sign that volume and capacity are shifting back to the contract environment, which would square with cooling spot metrics in van segments, even though we are seeing, obviously, major job gains. More granular data is available, but only through March, so it does not reflect the big gain in April, and in fact, it reflects a significant decline, the first, in fact, in overall employment in trucking since the contraction. As of March, local general freight led recovery at 21,300 jobs ahead of February 2020. General freight truckload was 7,900 jobs ahead, although there was a disconnect there because while total jobs were ahead by 7,900, production and non-supervisory employment was down 6,900 jobs. And we typically think of that as being more closely associated with the driver workforce. But obviously, there are a lot of jobs in that category. Okay, let's recap the key takeaways for the week. FMCSA is moving forward with a rule to govern trucks. Diesel prices jumped more than 11 cents to another record. Spot rates in the van segments halted their slide, but still did not keep pace with fuel costs. Mortgage rates rose and were the highest since August of 2009. Job openings and quits both set records in March. The U.S. added 428,000 jobs in April. The labor participation rate fell to 62.2%. And trucking added the most jobs in 9 years. Next week, we'll talk about inflation at the consumer and producer level, and applications for new businesses. But I'm sure there will be plenty to say about diesel prices and the spot market and who knows what else. That's it for FTR's Trucking Market Update, episode 161 for the week of May 9th, 2022. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we hope you will join us next week.
That's it for this week's Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast. You can find more publicly available State of Freight content and download the PDF and PowerPoint of today's presentation by going to www.ftrintel.com/podcast. FTR is the leader in freight transportation forecasting in North America, providing consistently reliable reports for trucking, rail, and intermodal transportation, as well as providing demand analysis for commercial vehicle and rail car. For more information about the work of FTR, visit www.ftrintel.com or call us at 888-988-1699 to find out which publications will best support your business.